This is the sixth day of this January 2015 Rohatsu 7-day session. And today we'll take up a koan, another koan. This is from the Blue Cliff Record collection, number 42, Layman Pong's Beautiful Snowflakes. Here's how the koan goes. When Layman Pong took leave of Yaksan, the latter asked 10 Zen monks to escort him to the temple gate to bid him farewell. The layman, pointing to the falling snowflakes, said, "Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere." Then one of the Zen students named Zenkaku, which means a practitioner of Zen, asked, "Then where do they fall?" The layman slapped him. Zenkaku said, "Even a layman shouldn't be so crude." The layman said, "Though you call yourself a Zen student, old Yama won't let go of you." Zenkaku said, "What about you?" Again the layman slapped him and said, "You look but you are blind, you speak but you are mute." And then Secho offers a comment at the end, "When Pong first spoke, I would have made a snowball and hit him with it." So this layman Pong is the most famous lay Zen Buddhist in Chinese Zen history. He lived during the Tang Dynasty. His dates are 740 to 808. He trained under the two great teachers of his era, Shuto and Mazu. Their Japanese names are Sekiso and Baso. There's some text I read once where there was a saying at the time that Shuto and Mazu divide the world of Zen between them. We mentioned Mazu yesterday, Baso, as having had 139 enlightened disciples. I'm reading here from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. Layman Pong's wife and daughter were also Zen practitioners. And Zen literature is rich with stories about this whole household's attainment of the way. Very, very unusual as part of the lore, the Zen lore. It's mostly monks. When Layman Pong was 45 years old, he began, at the age of 45, he began training under Shuto. And he soon attained a breakthrough recognized by his teacher. Apparently, this is how it happened. Layman Pong asked him, "Who is the one who is not a companion to the 10,000 dharmas?" And the dharmas here with a small d means things, phenomena. So Pong is really asking, who is beyond, who transcends the world of phenomena? And Shuto, at that, he quickly covered Pong's mouth with his hand. And at that, Pong suddenly had a realization. One day Shito asked, "What have you been doing each day since we last saw each other?" Pong said, "If you ask about daily affairs, then nothing can be said." The truth is that when we are one, when we are truly absorbed and one with what we're doing, we often will forget about what it was. It's not filed away as a thing apart from us. This is true. We can forget what we had for breakfast or lunch. I'm going to back up just a little bit, go to another source here. And after this initial awakening, when Shito covered Pong's mouth, Pong wrote the following verse: "Daily, nothing particular, only nodding to myself, nothing to choose, nothing to discard. No coming, no going. No person in purple, blue mountains without a speck of dust." And then the next lines are the most famous, I think, for Layman Pong, where he says, "How miraculous and wondrous hauling water and carrying firewood." Another translation has him saying, "These are my hauling wood and carrying firewood. These are my supernatural powers." When the mind is empty, even the simplest activity, the most uncomplicated activity, becomes magical. Scrubbing pots, shoveling snow, tying a shoe. It's very seldom that most people ever are in such a state of mental purity, that is, without thought, beyond thought, that they can experience this. But it's going on all the time, around us, within us. Some people can get a glimpse of this in Sesshin, especially late in Sesshin, where just for a moment, usually just a fleeting moment, with the mind empty, the most simple activity, washing your hands, sweeping with a broom, becomes amazing, wondrous. And then Pong went to Ma Zhu, this other great teacher, and he asked him, same question he had asked Shito: "Who is the one who is not a companion to the 10,000 dharmas?" Ma Zhu said, When you swallow all of the water in the West River in one gulp, then I'll tell you. Hearing these words, Layman Pong fully realized the mystery. He then stayed and practiced under Ma Zhu for 2 years. He wrote a verse, the following verse: "A man unmarried, a woman unbetrothed, happily they are brought together, they both speak without saying words." Subject and object, this and that, now and then, up and down, success and failure, brought together, they speak without saying words. Another source has Pong composing the following verse after this awakening under Ma Zhu: "The 10 directions converging, each learning to do nothing. This is the hall of Buddha's training. Mind is empty, all's finished." Here's another dialogue where Layman Pong attended a reading of the Diamond Sutra. The speaker, when he reached the phrase, "No self, no other," Layman Pong called out, "Speaker, if there is no self and no other, then who is lecturing and who is listening to it?" The speaker was dumbstruck. Layman Pong said, "I'm just a common person, but I'll offer you my crude understanding." The speaker said, "What is the layman's idea?" And then he answered with this verse: "No self, no other, then how could there be intimate and estranged? I advise you to cease all your lectures. They can't compare with directly finding the truth. The diamond wisdom nature erases even a speck of dust. Thus have I heard, and thus I believe, are but so many words." This is the standard formula or phrase that begins each sutra, is "thus have I heard." Once Layman Pong asked his daughter, Ling Zhao, "An ancient said, 'Clear and brilliant are the meadow grasses. Clear and brilliant is the meaning of the ancestral teachers. How do you understand this?'" His daughter said, "So old and great, and yet you talk like this." Layman Pong said, "What would you say?" Daughter said, "Clear and brilliant are the meadow grasses. Clear and brilliant is the meaning of the ancestral teachers." And at that, Layman Pong laughed. The other thing that Layman Pong is most famous for is they're said to have taken all their possessions, put them in a boat, and sunk them in a river. Another version of that is all his gold. Layman Pong took all his gold and sank it in the river. One more story here that you can believe or not, as you choose. When Laman Pong was about to die, he said to his daughter, "Go look at the sun and see what time it is. Just when it's noon, come and tell me." The daughter knew what he was up to. He was planning to die. So she went to the door and looked out and said, "The sun has just reached noon, but there's an eclipse." When Laman Pong went to the door and looked out, his daughter went to her father's seat, placed her hands together, and passed away. Laman Pong smiled. There you go. Laman Pong smiled and said, "My daughter's deftness." He then postponed his departure from the world by 7 days. The governor of Zhangzhou came to visit Laman Pong and asked about his illness. Laman Pong said to him, "I ask that you regard everything that is as empty, nor give substance to that which has none. Farewell. The world is like reflections and echoes." Then, placing his head on the governor's knee, Laman Pong passed away. His cremated remains were cast upon rivers and lakes. Monks and laity mourned him, saying that he was actually Vimalakirti. 300 of Laman Pong's poems were left to spread through the world. Now, the other protagonist of this koan, Yaksan, I'll forego reading biographical material about him. He's in another koan. I'll save it for that. He doesn't figure prominently in this koan anyway. Except to say that when this koan begins, it says, when Laman Pong took leave of Yaksan, I learned somewhere that was the day when he left after having spent 17 years with Yaksan. So he was, of course, 17 years at this monastery. He knew everyone, probably. And Yaksan knew his disciples' the depth of his understanding and his stature in the community. And so he asked 10 of the other students to escort him to the temple gate to bid him farewell. No doubt Yaksan, the master, knew that he could count on Laman Pong to get something going with these monks. And sure enough, he steps out, he looks at the falling snowflakes, and he says, "Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere." This is the main point of the koan, is to understand what he means. I think most people who have seen snow falling have a sense of what he's talking about, just a little bit at least. That it can seem like, even though they're obviously in motion, that there is a sameness to them that is kind of an optical illusion. They're falling, but they're not falling. There's one screen of movement within the screen, but the screen stays as it is, the image before our eyes. In the Shurangama Sutra, the Buddha says, swiftly flowing water, when viewed from afar, appears still. Snow, both falling snow and a blanket of snow, has so much about it that settles the mind. There's the just the purity of it as the whiteness. There's the way that it covers things. Things gradually, as the snow falls, things become no things. They lose their form. The sharp edges, shapes become softened. This is the same process that we see as we do extended periods of zazen. There's a kind of blanketing of the mind as we move from discrimination into oneness. Under a blanket of snow, everything acquires a kind of equality. Affirming faith in mind, we have this stanza: if mind does not discriminate, all things are as they are, as one. From a Buddhist doctrine perspective, where we enter this world of emptiness, formlessness. At the same time, oneness. Things are harder to discriminate in deep snow. I think of the phrase, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. We all are brought together in snow. We're brought together in a psychological way. Surely everyone knows how a heavy snowstorm can bring people together, can find people making eye contact and even smiling and talking about the snow. We all have our driveways, our walks to shovel or plow. No one escapes. No one is apart. Purify our whole world in this featureless white environment. It's no wonder that we are affected by snow. If we can get beyond the practical problems of snow, if we can see it just as it is, beyond the usefulness or the inconvenience of it, but just behold this falling snow, this blanket of snow, as it is. And as the cars and the bushes gradually disappear under this blanket of snow, as the lawn chairs and the everything else, our minds have the freedom to let go. We can find ourselves strangely lightened by this blanketing of things. If all thought objects disappear, the thinking subject drops away. Is also the silence of snow, the hush. There's a faint sound, isn't there? There's a monk from China who was said to have come to awakening at the sound of snow falling. And this featureless, quiet environment naturally finds its way into the mind. For mind is mind because of things. Just as noise and commotion of busy cities or malls are going to stir the mind, even possibly agitate it, this great gift of a snowfall gives us a kind of repose. Really, the falling snow is like Zazen, hours of Zazen, days of Zazen piling up. Find ourselves even able to get beyond our petty concerns, our differentness, distinctions such as large and small have relevance for you no more. The trick is to be able to appreciate snow the way a child does. We all remember, if we grew up in this climate, we all remember what it was to see the first snow of the fall, November, December, whenever. Our household went crazy. My sisters running around. And then it would be an annual thing. And even as adults, we can experience some of this excitement. The first time that mysterious, magnificent snow starts falling, coming down. Whether or not it covers anything, just the whole movement that is no movement. Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere. And then this wise guy, Zenkaku, asks, he probably steps forward and he says, then where do they fall? At this point in the koan, this early point in the koan, just from that line, from the description, him saying, then where do they fall, we don't know the degree of understanding of this Zenkaku. This could be a challenge. He could be an enlightened monk who wants to get some kind of dharma exchange going with Layman Pong. Then where do they fall? But then the next line reveals all. The layman slapped him. What does that slap mean? What is he saying to him when he slaps him? Well, whatever it is, Zenkaku misses it. As he says, even a layman shouldn't be so crude. Here we see the sharp, bright line between monks and lay people in ancient China, saying, you may be nothing more than a layman, but even you, a layman, shouldn't be so crude as to strike me, a monk. To which Layman Pong says, tah, though you call yourself a Zen monk, old Yama won't let go of you. Yama is short for Yamaraja, the Lord of the Dead. He's saying, you still have these afflictions that will consign you to a painful rebirth. And then Zenkaku, what about you? It's another point in the koan is, how does he say that? What about you? And then again the layman slapped him. Said, you look but you are blind, you speak but you are mute. There's a verse I found somewhere, a verse attributed to Layman Pong, in which he says, fine snow falling flake by flake, each flake falls in its own proper place. don't know that any of any koan that so beautifully conveys the this mind of no form, no color, no sound, no movement, no discrimination. And then we have a comment by Secho at the end where he says, when Pong first spoke, I would have made a snowball and hit him with it. You often have Secho attaching his own comment to sort of puncture whatever kind of romanticism or drama there might be in the koan. It's very Zen-like. Any kind of idealizing of these masters. Bah, I would have hit him with a snowball. And then there's a verse to the koan. Secho wrote this too, in which he says, hit him with a snowball, hit him with a ball. Even the best will fail to reply. Neither heaven nor earth knows what to do. Eyes and ears are blocked with snow. Even the blue-eyed monk can't explain. Eyes and ears are blocked with snow. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Or is there pain or cause of pain or cease in pain or noble path to lead from pain? Not even wisdom to attain. No self, no other, no time. And to that, Secho ends, even the blue-eyed monk can't explain. The blue-eyed monk always refers to the Buddha. Or is it Bodhidharma? Could be Bodhidharma. Doesn't matter. Neither one could explain. Oh, that's for sure. I'm going to close with a poem by Wallace Stevens, a poet, I think he's an American poet, his dates are 1879 to 1955, and it's called The Snowman. One must have a mind of winter to regard the frost and the boughs of the pine trees crusted with snow, and have been cold a long time to behold the junipers shagged with ice, the spruces rough in the distant glitter of the January sun, and not to think of any misery in the sound of the wind, in the sound of a few leaves, which is the sound of the land full of the same wind that is blowing in the same bare place. For the listener who listens in the snow and nothing himself beholds nothing that is not there and the nothing that is. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.